decennial anniversary of forgiveness coming up, along with connecting the dots between the tools that we have and making those tools work for the products we want, namely peace. Hey, this is Father Voska, and I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, inviting you to kick back right now as we take this next step, episode number 422.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready, we're taking the next step.
The word for today is decennial. How's that for a word? What does that mean, decennial? Think about it for a moment. And then forget about it, because let me welcome you. It's not about that right now, because that's coming up. But for today, I'm so glad you're with us today on this July 7th, 2016. And I'm here to tell you about a decennial event, which is going to take place next year. Because exactly 9 years ago today, there was no next step. But we had a conference. It was called the Forgiveness Conference. It was the first ever Forgiveness Conference. We organized it, and I'll tell you all about it in a few minutes, but we organized it around a very special date, namely July 7th, 2007. Because on that day, the sevens lined up. It was an aligning of the sevens, which we went ahead and we actually embodied the sevens. And there is a picture. Let's see if we could get that cool picture up. We'll put it on today's show notes. There is a picture of us in a spiral. It's called the Universal Spiral of Peace. You've probably seen it. I believe it's on our Facebook page. The Universal Spiral is a compilation of people who are lined up embodying the sevens. Now, what's so important about that is that, well, Jesus said, when somebody asked him, how many times should I forgive my brother? Should I forgive him seven times? If he sins against me, if he hurts me seven times, should I forgive him? And Jesus says, no, not seven times, but seven times, 70 times. So do the math. That's 490 times. So if somebody hurts you 490 times, Jesus tells you, you have to forgive them. Guess what? If they hurt you a 491st time, it's okay. You can have your vengeance on them. You don't need to forgive them, because that's outside of the limits. Jesus put a limit. 7 times 70 times. That's 490 times. That's the limit. Is that right? Of course not. But you know that there are people who live by these kind of numbers, by this type of literalism. In fact, we saw it just this morning. You know that video that we had done on Vartavar last week? People out there, yeah, you know, this is not in the Bible. Yeah, nobody's claiming it's in the Bible. We're telling you something beyond that. Can you get it through your head that it's okay to live? It's okay to exist. It's okay to be a part of life. Do you get that? People are so wound up about this literalist understanding that they will go ahead and they will come to me. You know, because we actually created this logo of 7 times 77. We thought that, yeah, Jesus doesn't have a limit. I mean, he says basically to forgive unceasingly, forgive without limits. So when he said 7 times 70, it's not about 490 times. It's about forgiving forever. Forgiving always, just as our Heavenly Father forgives us. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. Do you want to be forgiven forever? You need to forgive others forever. You want to be forgiven twice? Forgive somebody twice. Jesus says 7 times 70, not because it's 490 times, but because there's an infinite amount of forgiveness in our Father, and that's what he demands of each and every one of us, to forgive one another. And so we extended it. We put an extra 7 in there because aesthetically, yeah, it looks beautiful too. 7 times 77. And we called it the forgiveness formula. The forgiveness formula. 7 times 77. And yeah, there are people who came up to us, still do. They'll see that on a t-shirt. Hey, you know, Jesus didn't really say that. You say, what? Jesus really didn't say that. He said 7 times 70. Did something go over your head at that point? There was a time where I would sit there and explain it, but you know what? They're beyond explanation at this point because all they want is that literal definition of it. Yeah, Jesus did not say 7 times 77. We said it. Are we improving Jesus' works? No, we're not. We're not attempting to do that. We're trying to define what we believe, what we understand in Jesus' words of forgiving unceasingly. And so we had the 7 times 77 formula as a forgiveness formula, and we celebrated it on July 7th, 2007, when the sevens lined up. It was 777, the calendar date. And we went with the time, too. We did something, what was it, at 8:17, which would be 7-7 on the clock. We figured out some kind of formula for it. I can't remember exactly how we did it. But we had all the sevens line up. And actually, we embodied the sevens by placing our hands out, basically becoming a seven ourselves. In other words, living out that faith, we first needed to visualize it. And so basically, we gave everybody every means they needed. We gave them the math, we gave them the words, and we gave them the visual. So it didn't matter which way you learned. Didn't matter if you were a visual learner, if you were a cerebral learner, whatever it was. There was the message. And we held it on July 7th, 2007. And we had speakers come out. I'll put a link on our website. We brought one gentleman from Rwanda, a person that I had met a year earlier. He had actually forgiven the man who had raped his mother and killed his family. Bizarre. Yes, Rwanda, genocide. There was a genocide there in 1994. And this man, his name was Ben Kayumba. He came and he visited along with his wife, Stephanie. And they told the story of forgiveness. Of how he had to forgive so that he could move forward. Forgiveness is not about letting somebody off the hook. It's about giving yourself a break so that you can move forward. Yeah, it's not about giving somebody a break. Although God gives us a break. But here's the ultimate example of forgiveness. Not in somebody forgiving somebody who has devastated their life. But the ultimate forgiveness is from Jesus on the cross. Right? He's there up on the cross, and what does he say? Here is humanity. Here is all of humanity that he has created. He was there at the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was there at the beginning. The same humanity that he created, and now not only denied him, betrayed him, spat upon him, but had hung him to a cross, nailed him to a cross, and watched as he slowly suffered an excruciatingly painful death, including suffocation, including bleeding, dehydration. And in that state, Jesus says, "Forgive them, they do not know what they are doing." He forgives from the cross. Now, what happens from the cross? Humanity is forgiven, yes, because Christ himself has forgiven us. But even more, think about it in these terms. Did we forget about it? No. Here we are, 2,000 years later, still remembering it. So listen to this. Forgiveness has nothing to do with memory. It has to do with release. In other words, you can't bunch it up with forgive and forget or forgive and don't forget. It's not, one is, it's not dependent on the other. Yeah, there is a forgiveness and there is a remembrance. These things you have to coordinate in your life, and there are different degrees by which we do that. But forgiveness means to let it go. That person is no longer accountable to you for that crime because you have accepted it. And in your acceptance, he or she has accepted it. It's done. You don't need verification. It's already done. By your forgiveness, you've already said, it's done and it's over. And you can't change that past. All you can do is change today and, of course, tomorrow. So it's rather complicated, but we did this. We had this forgiveness conference. Also, we invited a wonderful lady, just a beautiful lady inside and outside. Her name was Letitia Aguirre. And I had met Letitia, Mrs. Aguirre, back in, I think, 2003, when I first started the Youth Ministry Center in Glendale. There, right across from us, was Hoover High School, and Mrs. Aguirre's son, Raul, had broken up a fight between two Armenian boys, after school fight, you know? Hoover High School, directly across from our church. Hoover High School, dedicated to the president, Herbert Hoover. Hoover High School, two students fighting, two Armenians fighting. And Raul Aguirre, being a kind and peace-loving man, goes right in the middle of them and wants to stop the fight. And they kill him. Yes, they kill him right there, right in front of the school, in front of the church. This had happened, I believe it was the year 2000. So I get there in 2003 and I meet Mrs. Aguirre. And remember, the two Armenian kids had killed her son, Aguirre, Hispanic, right? All these racial tensions, possibilities for racial tensions. And what did I find in Mrs. Aguirre? Basically a saint. She had forgiven the boys that had killed her son. Not only had she said, I forgive you, she had also gone to the trial. She had talked to them, exchanged a hug with them, and told them that she understands the pain of their parents. And because she wants to walk in the shoes of their parents, she understands their pains and forgives them. Wow. She told her story. We had a conference on 777. And it was unforgettable because everybody who came to that conference walked away with something that will be a pattern for their life. Now, we want to do it again next year. It will be the decennial 10-year anniversary, July 7, 2017. The sevens will be lining up. It'll be 7-7-17. We're going to remember the forgiveness formula, 7 times 77. We're going to talk about that. We're going to have an opportunity to share. We're going to have speakers. And the venue is going to be very special. I would like to have a very, very special venue. We're looking at a couple possibilities. One is in America, in the northern states, because it is July. It gets rather hot in some of the other states, but we're thinking about a retreat setting. And of course, our other option is to do it in Armenia. So we're checking out the different opportunities, the different venues, and hopefully we're going to be able to announce that in the next few weeks so that people can make plans for next year. We want it to be a worldwide event focusing in on forgiveness, an opportunity for us to walk in the shoes of others, an opportunity for us to practice armodoxy, not about forgiving 490 times, but the armodox saying of 777 times, just as valid as 1,777 times, just as valid as 490 or 531. In other words, it's not about numbers. It's about the heart forgiving constantly, unceasingly, just as Christ commanded us and taught us in his example. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. It will be the decennial. It'll be the 10th anniversary of the first ever forgiveness conference. I'm inviting you, our Next Step listeners, put it on your calendar right now, okay? Take a moment, put it on your calendar. I want you to be there. This is an opportunity, really, for us to make a statement to the world. You will not want to miss this one. Put it on your calendar, and I promise you, in the next few weeks, we'll give you a venue, tell you where it is, so you can even make your reservations early, and you can be there. It will be a couple days. The next year, the 7th of July, will be on a Friday, so we're anticipating a Friday conference that goes over into the weekend. It'll go Saturday and then culminate in the celebration of the Divine Liturgy together. Just an incredible opportunity. You will not want to miss it. With that being said, how about if we listen to the song and then I'll come back with some fun stuff? Well, just as fun as this one was. So here is today's song of the day. Enjoy. Gagik Gasparyan, off of his album La Musica del Mundo, one of the Armenian tunes on there. It is an album filled with world music. And I will have a link on today's show notes so you could check out not only this album, but all of his great music. I met Gagik, six years ago when I was in Argentina. Wonderful young man, bringing his style, his unique talents to the world stage with his music. And of course, with Argentina being on our minds with the visit of His Holiness Pope Francis's visit to Armenia, and a delegation from Argentina, from Buenos Aires, went to visit him and to be there on that historic occasion. So I thought I'd put it all together with a little bit of Gagik Gasparyan music. I hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, his website will be on today's show notes. Do encourage not only him, but all of the musicians that we feature here on The Next Step. Well, how was your Vartavar this last Sunday? Did you get doused with water? Did they at least squirt you somewhere? Get you on the face? How about did they just put a bucket over your head with water? I got to church and this old lady was waiting for me. And when I approach her, she pulls out this little sprayer and she sprays me with water. Gets like basically my upper chest, torso, and you know my shirt's now wet. And I looked at her, I go, Mighty, come on, what are you doing? And we're both laughing. And she goes, last year I got you, and it seems like you were upset. So she says, I was going to get you just very casually. And I laughed at her. I gave her a hug. I said, what would I get upset about for this? You know, it just amazes me that on Vartavar, people just can't have fun because it's not in the Bible. You know, okay, there's a lot of things that aren't in the Bible. Driving isn't in the Bible. So should we not drive because it's not in the Bible? Okay, you know, you can have some fun too, okay? Squirt one another with water. It's a day of squirting. This is how it'll go. And as I explained last week, as I did through the ministry, it's an opportunity for us to also think about renewal, for us to start brand new as we do during our baptism, so that when there's water, you can think about your baptism. It's an opportunity. Don't miss an opportunity, whatever it is, for self-improvement. But it's always fascinating to me how people are so quick to run to the defense of Christianity. Or, well, let's say any religion, but primarily their own religion, right? But I notice it because I, being a Christian, being a priest, I notice it. And it's irritating that people don't have confidence in God to figure that God can take care of himself, that we have to stand up and be in the defensive posture for God. And so I will hear people that say, hey, it's not in the Bible. This isn't in the Bible. Well, guess what? Not all of us believe in the Bible in the same way that you believe in it. Yeah. Historically, the Bible has its place. This is not because I want it to be, I don't want it to be, it's not because of my own personal agendas, it's just a matter of fact that when the early Christian church was evolving, following the resurrection of Jesus Christ, up until the point that the early church fathers met, there was no Bible. Plain and simple. There was a church. Actually, right after the resurrection. What happens? 40 days later, they meet and Jesus directs them to go out to the world, baptizing people in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. This is called his ascension to heaven. And at that point, there was no Bible. 50 days after the resurrection, it was Pentecost. The church, Jesus breathed into them the Holy Spirit. The Christian church was formed. There was no Bible. There was all kinds of traditions. And they were weeding out traditions. They were trying to understand themselves. With the Holy Spirit's guidance, they brought together the faith that we have today. People are Christians because of the church, not because of the Bible. The Bible was a bunch of writings that were put together, and they are so sacred that we in the Armenian church refer to them as the breath of God, the Svazashunsh. But historically, now I'm not, you know, I know, this is, I know I'm going to get a lot of people, hey, you know, you're talking against the Bible. I'm not talking against the Bible. What I'm talking about is a historic reality. It's just like saying your parents existed before you did. If you come to me and say, I existed before my parents, what would I say? Sorry, it can't happen. As much as you want it to be the truth, as much as I believe that it might be the truth, it cannot happen. The historical reality is, you are created because of your parents. So therefore, your parents have to have existed before you. So that if you were born in the year 1965, that means your parents existed before 1965. And most probably before 1950, right? because they would have to at least be the age of 16, the age of conception, age that they could conceive and bring children. So they would have at least, at the very least, had to have existed in the early 1950s. Come to existence in that point. Okay, it's the same way. And you tell me that, well, the Bible has a birth. Bible is a collection of inspired writings. But guess what? There's something more important than the writings, and that's Jesus Christ, who is central to the faith. Jesus Christ is greater than the Bible. Jesus Christ came before the Bible. Jesus Christ gave us his church. And it was the church, historically, that put together those books that we know as the Bible, okay? So it always interests me that people will use the Bible as this defense, as if they were there, as if this Bible came out of heaven, you know, all bound in leather. And by the way, red, where Jesus spoke, red letters. Yeah, that's the Bible that they use to defend the faith. I have a Bible and in it, Jesus speaks in red letters. And they will argue with you. They will argue about this exists or this doesn't exist. And I guess it was just a couple days ago, my brother and his wife and kid had come down from San Francisco and said, we're going to be going up to a cabin. Here it's summertime here in the United States, and people get away for little adventures. They said, we've got a little cabin. Would you come up for the day, spend a day with us? And I had a few hours that we said, you know what, we can get away. It's a couple-hour drive. Let's go up there and visit with our nephew. And so my wife and I got in the car. We went up to a place called Big Bear. And after dinner, beautiful stars, we had a chance to settle down. And there was a television set. And I said, let me see what's on the TV. Let's see what we can watch. Catch up at the very least, with some news. And they didn't have any connection save for a satellite dish. And the satellite was connected to what it said, Telstar 5. And it was rather fascinating for me because as I scrolled through something like 200 channels, oh, most of them, I guess the people from whom they were renting the cabin, their background was about this Telstar 5 satellite. And on there, mostly shows from the Middle East, mostly shows from the Far East as well, but mostly shows from the Middle East, Far East, and mostly religious in nature. You could tell, even if you didn't understand the words, or there wasn't the proper subtitling, you could tell from the vestments that they wore, the rituals that they did, and it was beautiful. It was just, you're sitting there up in the mountains and you're watching all this different religious, a multitude of religious expression. And you start realizing that, you know, here in the world, we are celebrating life with people from different backgrounds. And our only hope is for our ability to be able to interact and to live in this environment, to be tolerant of one another and understand that if you want people to respect who you are, you need to be respectful of who they are. And this comes at a time when we are not respectful. We are not respectful. Primarily because of what? Not because of religion. Don't blame it on religion. Blame it on politics. The politicians who are trying to move ahead for their own personal gains. And those personal gains have to do with what, if nothing else, but the root of all evil, not money, but the love of money. To get ahead so that you can get more. Think about it for a moment. Think about the problems in this world. They all revolve around the love of money. And this love of money is beyond capitalism. I mean, most of the world is run by this capitalist dream. But the idea that money is not a tool. You see, we're under the illusion that what is, you know, there's an expression, what is mine is mine. And unfortunately, the church has not done a good job of teaching what Jesus talks about as far as stewardship. That money that you have is not really yours. You are a steward of that money. You are a steward of the talents. And you are a steward to take care of those things to be used for the betterment of everyone. And you start talking like this. They ascribe a political agenda to your speech, such as communism, such as socialism. Rather than understanding that what Jesus talked about is not about sharing the wealth, but sharing of life with one another. And so in this environment, as I'm watching these televisions and all these different people, I'm realizing that really in the complexity of the world, we have the opportunity to bring about peace when we can respect one another. But it's because of the profit motives of so many people in the background that we fail the mark on peace, that we can't attain that peace because people are trying to get ahead financially, politically, strength-wise, multitude of reasons. Now, enter in where we are today, 2016. And it occurred to me, I guess it was on the drive back, I was thinking about this, that really, we weren't really expecting to be in this position. The position that we're in today. Because on our way back, we were hearing about this tragic, tragic story that was coming out. It was unfolding from, I believe it was in New Orleans, where an officer had killed a gentleman for a routine stop. And I apologize, I don't have all the details, but basically it came down to this, that an officer, two white officers, killed a black man during a routine stop. They found something on him and they killed him in the pursuing fight by pulling out guns. And apparently this has been documented on video because somebody stood off and video recorded this altercation, this murder. Let's call it for what it is, this murder. Because it is a murder, okay? As policemen, you are there to enforce the law. And even if you see it, you cannot act as judge and jury. You cannot act as convictor. You cannot act as executioner, okay? You find somebody has done wrong. Even if you see that person steal something, that doesn't give you the right to be the executioner and, you know, kill that person. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. And so this story was unfolding. I had this memory of just a few hours ago watching all these, this multitude of religious expressions from different parts of the world. And it's basically at your fingertips on this two-dimensional screen. And I started thinking about, well, when you get home, you're going to be opening up your Twitter feed. You're going to be opening up your Instagram. You're going to be opening up your Facebook page and looking at all these people posting this and that and their comments. And it occurs to me that, you know what, this has become the way that we are now living out this illusion that somehow by this social media, we are going to change the world. We heard about it. We remember it in such cases like the Arab Spring, how people went to social media and they were able to influence and change and bring down regimes. And so we operate under this illusion that somehow, too, we could sit in front of a computer screen, a two-dimensional screen, and make changes in the world. And sure enough, that night when I got home, and sure enough, every place, whether it was the Instagram feeds with the small little videos and chats, on the Twitter feeds, especially the different Twitter chats that were taking place this way and that way, and calling each other names, and on Facebook, with the multitude of one after the next, of people chiming in, rest in peace to the person, look at those awful officers, and making the judgment calls themselves, no matter where you look, people were talking. Because we have never been in this position in our lives. This is all brand new, uncharted area. Think about it. Never in our dreams. I was born last century. You guys know that. I don't know what century you were born, but I could pretty much guarantee that in your wildest dreams, you did not imagine that everybody would have basically a very high definition video camera or a still camera that they walked around in their pockets. And yet that's what the reality is today. Basically, everybody has a video camera in their cell phone. And everybody can shoot the images, the actions around them, and everyone can post. And so what's happened all of a sudden? Power, which used to be in the hands of just a few, namely the journalists, people who would get it out on the what was it called, the Fourth Estate, the newsprint, on radio, on television. Television, when that came out, ooh, big time. Who controlled television? What were the images that you were seeing? But now, basically, anybody could get away with doing whatever they want to. You have the internet. And this is an empowerment that's been given to us beyond our dreams. You now have the ability to broadcast injustice and share it with the rest of the world. And in so doing, you are empowered. And in that empowerment, it is easy to operate and to live under the illusion that you can make the changes. Because what's missing from so many of these interactions is the spark for somebody to say, I'm willing to go out on a limb for that. That's different from the Jesus experience. He talked a good talk, but he also lived it out, right? He spoke about love, spoke about sacrifice, and then in the end, he went on the cross. Quite a bit different than just showing videos, sharing this or that. Change.org. Here, sign my petition. I remember, about a week, 2 weeks ago, somebody stopped me in one of the Armenian venues. Dead-eyed, Father, would you come up and sign our petition? What's the petition? We are petitioning that Turkey give the ancient lands back to Armenia. Are you serious? You're petitioning? I mean, seriously, this is exactly what I'm saying. It's an illusion. It's an illusion that somehow, if you get enough people to sign a petition on change.org, that the government's going to say, here's your lands back because here's a million people. Do I have to remind you what happened? But do you remember back in the Iraqi war? I'll never forget this. Who was the Prime Minister of England? Richard, I can't remember his name. During the Iraqi war. They had a million people come out on the streets of London protesting the United Kingdom's involvement in the Iraqi war. Didn't change his mind. Tony Blair. Didn't change his mind. They went in. They joined the Allied forces. They went in. Million people, critical mass. What's your critical mass? 5 million people, 10 million people, and signing a petition, a Facebook ad, a Twitter feed, and that's going to change the world. There is this illusion, and we're not prepared for it, because now we have this false empowerment. We have the tools. We have a video camera in our pocket. We have access to this great number of people. Millions, if not billions of people on the planet. You have access to them. But that doesn't mean you can mobilize. That doesn't mean you can change the people. Even some of our most viral videos that are out there. What's a million people? You had a million people standing up in London protesting the war. And yet Blair went for it, right? It goes back, yeah, when we were kids. $1 million. If you had $1 million, wow. You basically retired. Now, if you have $1 million, well, not bad. I wouldn't complain if I had one. But it's far from where it was a few decades ago, right? I mean, you still have to work. Still couldn't make it because your debts, the amounts that you owe, what you're trying to do. And it's basically different times. Nobody in their wildest dreams imagined that we would be at this point in our lives right now, where everybody, just about everybody's walking around with the tools to engage in this global society, but without the heart to engage in that society. And so when we talk here on the next step about the different things that we're doing, we have to be cognizant that when we're talking about all of these things that are so important in our lives, it's not just about having the tools, but having that heart and that desire. A couple weeks ago, it was about a month ago, I shared with you an incident that took place in the diocese. Some idiot had written in an Armenian tabloid. There's a few of these tabloids. There used to be a few. Actually, there's just now one that's left. Comes out of Glendale. When I say tabloid, you know what a tabloid is? Basically like of National Enquirer status. Basically, you write about the two-headed calves, and you write about your cousin who was impregnated by aliens who came to this Earth and picked her up and put her on a spaceship, impregnated her, and then sent her back down to Earth. And then she had offspring, and now they have a colony out in Idaho someplace, and so on and so on. Yeah, well, there's a tabloid of this nature, Armenian, what's it called? USA Armenia in Glendale. And he basically has a tabloid where he sits on his ivory tower and he criticizes people. And he took a good stab at our archbishop. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying anybody is above the law, above criticism. We all should be criticized, but within context too, right? You just don't go out there and discredit somebody. You don't libel, slander somebody. Especially if you're not in the game, right? Isn't it interesting? You don't go to church, but somehow you have the ability to talk about the church? Why? Why is that? You don't belong to the church, but you have the ability to go out there and talk about the church. Why should that right be given to you? Well, it's been given to us because now we have all of these tools. And because these tools give us the illusion that we have the tools and that we can do it. It's just like giving a saw in the hand of your child and saying, okay, here's a saw, here's a piece of wood. I want you to build a sun deck for me. Well, the kid doesn't have the skills, right? He may have the saw. You can even give him a hammer and nails, but that doesn't mean that he's going to put together this beautiful deck for you. And that's what we are right now. We have tools. We have high-definition cameras sitting in our pockets. We have communication devices that can text, that can relay our voices, that can relay videos and pictures. But that doesn't mean we're journalists. That doesn't mean that we have the ability to bring about those changes. And that requires some thought. That requires some engagement, and it requires some heart. And that heart requires love. Yeah. Let me tell you, you look out at the religions, it's not religion that is separating people. Sure, you have some fanatics out there. You have this violence out there from a small little group of religious fanatics out there. But the vast majority of religion is about bringing people together. It's about celebration of life. It's not religion that is keeping people apart. It's politics. It's the struggle for power. It's the struggle for money. And we as church need to engage in that dialogue that money is just the same way as the video phone that you have in the video camera that you have in your phone, same way that money is merely a tool. You are called to be a steward of that tool, to use that tool rightly, correctly. And when you think about the President of the United States, arguably the most powerful man in the world, right? The job pays $200,000 a year. $200,000 a year. That's great money, man. Don't get me wrong. I'll take it. But look at what you got to do. Why would someone like a Donald Trump or a Hillary Clinton want to leave the millions. Why would they want to leave the money that they're making right now for a $200,000 a year job? Because it's not about the money. Okay, let's establish that. So what's it about? It's about power. It's about the opportunities to sway and influence. It's about the bigger money, the bigger prize that's out there. And these ambitious dreams that people have are really what screws up this whole world. And so when you get religion that says, you know, that ambition filtered in that respect, in that direction, is what's killing us. Your selfishness, your apathy is what's killing us. I think that's what, I don't know if I got to the end of that newspaper I was telling you about. Yeah. Just horrendous, horrendous stuff that he was writing in there. But what it came down to was the apathy. Not enough people stood up and said, enough. We don't want your newspaper. Don't send us your newspaper. We cancel our subscription. We will not, and actually they don't have many subscribers because it's a throwaway tabloid. So instead, how about if we turned around and said, we will not support your sponsors? But sadly, weeks later, we're not doing that. We haven't done that. And so that apathy is the opposite of that spirit that you need. Yes, we have the tools, but you can't use those tools if you're apathetic, obviously. But you also need that spirit to push it forward. Jesus was a good statement out there. He lived a good life talking about good things. But if he didn't accept the challenge of the cross, it'd be hard for us to understand how all of this makes sense. But he went up to the cross. He conquered the cross. He conquered evil. Same way in our lives. We have challenges in front of us. We have all the tools. We have saws, we have hammers, but we cannot build the deck unless we have the spirit, unless we have the vision for what that deck should look like. Same way, you see the world. You can't put together a beautiful world of harmony unless you can see and envision that beautiful world of harmony, which is one that comes to you out of the source of love, namely God. And so without God, yeah, you have a bunch of tools, but you're unable to put it all together. Without God or love, you really you have some great, great, great tools, but you're unable to create that deck. You're unable to bring about the change that is lasting, that is for peace. And so here you go. A message for this week. As Rod Serling would say, right out of the Twilight Zone, maybe. But coming up from the mountain, listening to these stories, I had to share this one with you. Here is Susie to share with you the message of how you can get involved with us. I'll be back in a few moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
So it has now been 8 years, and we have started our ninth year of podcasting, The Next Step. And as Susie tells you, it goes on because of your prayers, your support, your donations. And we ask for those, because it's a simple way of being part of it. You know, we talked about tools today. We have the tools, and one of the tools is money. To be able to use that money effectively, you are steward of that money. Don't ever operate under the illusion that that money is yours. You know, there's a saying, you can't take it with you. I know people have tried to. You can't. You really can't. And it's really the worth, the value of that money is in what you do with that money today. I know churches that are sitting on top of millions of dollars. I used to work at one of those churches back in the early 80s. I was the assistant to the priest. And it used to always bother me because, you know, if the roof leaked, you'd have to have a fundraiser. And meanwhile, you had like, I think it was like $2-3 million, $4 million, which was big money back in those times, $5 million in the bank. And you couldn't touch it for a roof because it was in the name of something. No, that's mismanaging. At that same time, that's really mismanaging. At that same time, early 80s, I assumed the pastorate in the Silicon Valley, Santa Clara Valley. And at the same time, there was a church in Walnut Creek. And for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of it, but I will look it up. I'll dig it up. At that time that I started in the Silicon Valley, there was this non-Armenian church, Protestant church, that had a $2 million a year budget. I'll never forget that. $2 million. And again, this is early 1980s. $2 million, sizable budget. They started their year with $2,000 in the bank, and they ended their year with $2,000 in the bank. It wasn't about making money. It was about using that money. They brought in $2 million, and they used $2 million to feed the needy, to clothe the naked, to outreach with their ministries. That's where church should be. That's what we have advocated and we do at InHisShoes. It's not about stockpiling money and see how much we have in the bank. To me, that's mismanagement. To me, that's wrong management. To be able to take that money and use it, to be a proper steward, to say that God has given me these talents, and I'm going to invest this money, not to make more money, but to bring in souls for Christ, to bring in those people. That's what really our work is all about. So there's your challenge today. Really, it's a challenge that goes beyond our boundaries. And it challenges all of us to really take a look at how we invest in the ministry. And we're inviting you to invest in this ministry. It is one that goes beyond the boundaries. And we hope it gives you something to talk about, something to stimulate your mind, and something to do as well. In other words, to take some action in reaching out to the poor, in reaching out to other people, in talking about issues of forgiveness. And don't forget, we are exactly 1 year away from the decennial anniversary of 777. It will be 7/7/17, exactly 1 year from today. I want you to be there. I want you to mark it on your calendar. I want you to put aside some money to be there. It's going to cost a little bit of money. Don't let that be the reason why you're not there. Yeah, no, I don't mean you're going to be giving me money. No, it's going to cost you, right? You're going to have to travel. You're going to have to stay someplace. You're going to have to eat someplace, but it'll be great. It will definitely be worth it. Put it on your agenda, you know, for a small investment now. You have time to save up. It's going to be a wonderful event. I want you to be there, okay? July 7th, 2017. The Forgiveness Conference, the decennial edition, okay? And with that, I invite you for your prayers. Send me your prayers. Those are the most important things. It keeps us going. If I told you some of the stories that happen here at Epostle, that happen within my personal life, I swear it is only by the grace of God. I swear that it is only those prayers that keep us going. I can tell you some incredible ones. I have throughout the years. I'll tell you some more coming. But for right now, we're going to call it a day. We are at the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it gave you... today was more of an opportunity to give you something to think about. I'd love to hear from you. You could drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net. That's epostle as in apostle, but with an E, because it's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding multiverse. With that, I want to thank you for joining us. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for download at epostle.net, iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, or on your favorite podcatcher. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cut out.